Michael, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it. So you and I have known each other for many years. I know that your career started in Vegas, right?
It certainly did.
Can you take us back a little bit on,
absolutely. It's one of those things. I mean, I've been in Vegas, obviously, over 30-some years. I ended up there, really by accident. I was living in Vancouver, Canada at a time, and my father, through a mutual friend, had some recommendations to, move the family to Las Vegas, and his friend actually, at that time, was working for the Tresendo Corporation, working for Mr. Kerkorian. Living in Vancouver was great, just going to school. I had no idea about anything about gaming. I kind of came into Las Vegas, started very, very young, living in
How old were you?
But, I was around 16 years old at the time, 15, 16. I mean, I just barely had probably got my driver's license.
Wow,
so
that's young.
Very young. Yeah, started high school there, started working in the casino business. Obviously, I couldn't work in the gaming at the time. So I started working in, basically food and beverage. I worked at a lot of places, Landmark Casino and Hotel, which was really a high rise, almost like the Seattle Needle. Worked there for almost 5 years.
What was it like back then?
It was interesting. I mean, I was going to
school,
so
the feel of it, right?
The feel for me was very exciting. I still remember the time. Actually, I was walking through the Landmark Casino with my dad. Looking at all the slot machines. He helped me. Obviously, he's one of my biggest mentors. He helped me all the way through, teaching me things. He was never in gaming himself, but he was a developer, building homes in Las Vegas, and that was one of the reasons he chose to go to Las Vegas. I didn't know too much about it at the time. I never thought I would, have a career in gaming. At that point, I think for me as a young man, it was just a job. I was fairly new to the United States. I lived most of my life as a child in Middle East. I was born in Chicago, so living in Las Vegas probably was, over 30 years. I feel like, I'm from there now. So even though I wasn't born there, most of my adult life was spent there. Have a lot of family there now and got finally married and, kind of worked my way through. So the Landmark was very interesting. I don't know how much you have on history on Landmark, but they had a great, I remember it had a great buffet and a restaurant on top of the Landmark. It probably had one of the best views at the time. And I just never understood why they demolished it. What's that?
What was the view from there?
Well, obviously not a lot was built at the time, but, people enjoyed coming up and looking at, just the valley and some of the casinos that were around. And, I think, when I just remember, watching the implosion, and at first it didn't even go down. I remember, these obviously dynamite, but it took a while for it to come down. But, being as close as it was to the convention center, it was kind of a surprise for me. It just never made it. I left a little bit before, I believe, Landmark had a lot of financial difficulties at the time. And at that point, I decided to move to the Golden Nugget. And the Nugget was just amazing to me. That was a Steve Wynn property. What was that?
Owner at the time?
I believe that was around 1986. Yeah, around 1986. So
cool.
After working at Landmark for about 5 years, so I was still barely of age to work in gaming. So I was still in food and beverage, kind of working my way up. In between, I had worked most of the showrooms. I worked, Bally's and, Caesars and a few other showrooms. I enjoyed that. Golden Nugget was just, to me, It was so different than the Landmark. You can just tell. You know, all the employees, you know, seemed happier. Obviously, I don't think they were having financial difficulties like the Landmark was at the time. You know, obviously, you know, what I realized there is that, you know, Mr. Nguyen really took care of his employees, and his management did a pretty good job. So I learned, I wasn't there too long. While I was working there, I also turned 21 and ended up getting a job with Dale Cortez as a slot floor person. So, you know, fresh 21, didn't know nothing but slots. What's that?
Yeah, well, Cortez, man. Yeah, cool place.
Yeah, so El Cortez, you know, at the time was owned by Jackie Gahn, you know, very great businessman from Nebraska. You know, kind of learned a lot of different things from Jackie, just the way, you know, set his examples on the casino floor. I still remember him walking through,
so
picking the plastics and taking care of stuff.
For people that don't know who that is, you want to tell them who Jackie Gahn was? Because I don't know if everybody knows, but he's basically an icon, right?
Jackie's from Nebraska. I mean, he started El Cortez, and, you know, he was a businessman that, you know, had a lot of property in Las Vegas, and he actually invested for the employees also while we were there. We had a great profit sharing. You know, he obviously is his son Michael Gahn. You know, his whole family was in, you know, within gaming. Growing up, you know, I would see a lot of them come through in and out. Like I said, Jackie was, you know, heavily involved with the sports books. You know, really set the pace for the downtown area and the competition. We learned a lot down there. You know, there was a lot of things that we went through, a lot of transitions from, we didn't have a lot of technology at the time, but obviously we learned about all the different types of slot games, you know, working all the way from the grinders to electromechanicals to, you know, semi-modern slot machines. But I was pretty much working downtown for about 7 years. You know, Jackie and also some of the mentors I had there, you know, it was very difficult. It was a very difficult time for me to say goodbye to the downtown. You know, Las Vegas Strip was growing.
Yeah, there's so much history down there. I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it? All the history.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, no, I think like if I would have started a little bit older, you know, it would have been different. But, you know, I know downtown went through a huge transition just, you know, obviously within that last, you know, 5 to 10 years again. But in 1993, I decided to move to MGM Grand. I had an opportunity to be part of the pre-opening team for MGM, and it was the first billion-dollar casino on the Las Vegas Strip. And I just saw that as something that, you know, would allow me to grow even further. So at that time,
so
I joined
chance
MGM.
Of a lifetime.
Yeah, and I was with MGM for, you know, close to 10 years. You know, went through.
So what was that like? Being involved in a project like that, opening a casino of that size at that time?
Well, it wasn't easy. I mean, obviously, it was just part of a team. I was brought in towards the end. You know, this was a decision that, I mean, I pretty much changed my life. A lot of people I met there gave me a lot of great opportunities. You know, I worked in different departments, you know, not only slots. I did some non-gaming business development also for them. You know, just the fact that casino was, you know, segmented in so many different, you know, for ready for different demographics, being city of entertainment. We actually called our employees cast members. We probably had one of the best training programs. I remember Cynthia Kaiser Murphy had put together and her team. They really cared about employees. Again, showing me, you know, great examples of, you know, how to engage with the employees, how to empower employees. Education was very important to them. I definitely owe, you know, my bachelor's to the MGM Grand. I mean, they allowed me to go to school. They supported me. At the time, you know, again, I was working and going to school, and allowed me to take on different projects. You know, one of the greatest mentors I had there was Danny Wade. And, you know, one day I was just sitting there having lunch and sat with me for a couple minutes and just started asking me questions and asked me if I wanted to get involved with more things. And, you know, the answer was yes. And, again, I was always willing to help out and see what I can do to help others. But it was fun. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about construction, learned a lot about technology. A lot of our teams, you know, whether it was spots or other departments helped.
Along the whole journey, how instrumental, you had a lot of people that were mentors to you, right? And this is a important thing in our business. And I think people don't talk about it enough and how, you know, the older generation has a responsibility to pass it forward and kind of prepare the next, you know, frontline people, just like, you know, that whole experience at MGM. Tell us a little bit
absolutely.
About some of those experiences and, you know, because it's such a big thing.
Yeah, as I mentioned, you know, people like Jackie Gahan. I mean, starting with downtown, you know, Jackie was definitely influential, but at the same time set the right examples. You know, not completely mimicking everything, but everything he did was, you know, pretty much turned into gold. But, you know, I certainly didn't know all the businesses that he was taking care of. But the people that worked for him, like Rick Lehman, Frank Cornett, they have to be some of the best slot guys in the industry. Learned a lot from those guys on, you know, floor setup, configuration, you know, technical aspects of everything, customer service. You know, in those days we were doing pretty much everything ourselves, marketing, security, promotions, slots. You know, there was departments, but everybody was involved. Moving into MGM,
explain
as
that.
I mentioned,
explain that a little bit, because, you know, that's something people don't really know that it used to be that way. Explain how you guys had departments, but everybody did everything. That's important. Expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the modern marketing departments that we have today. Everybody, again, would pitch in when promotions were happening and help out, whether it's passing out the gifts. You know, we have security issues on the floor. We had to catch certain people doing something wrong. You know, we would probably, you know, handle it ourselves and then work with security, but we would be involved pretty heavily. You know, at that point in time, you know, we had probably a couple thousand slot machines, so it was a fairly decent slot floor. You know, but as far as customer service, you know,
well, it was the biggest at the time, right?
I would think downtown wise, yeah. I mean, we had a lot of slots.
Yeah.
You know, I would think the Golden Egg was a little bit, you know, obviously nicer. Most of those properties now have gone through a lot of transition, which I'm really glad every time I go back down there. And I'm just so glad that they've looked at, you know, reinvesting and making themselves better. I know a lot of people still like going downtown, and, you know, with the Fremont experience and all the businesses down there now, they just like staying there. So it allows people, you know, whether they like to stay on the Strip or downtown, have options. But yeah, I mean, that's it's definitely one of those things that I think, you know, Las Vegas has to continue growing. I know the competition is very severe, and, you know, the percentage of amenities to gaming has completely changed. I believe it's like 70-30 now on the amenity side. And, you know, obviously things will continue growing, and, you know, we're looking at, you know, future generations and what's going to make them happy. There's some puzzling things out there, but I think as the years go by, we're definitely going to be figuring it out what the next steps are going to be for Las Vegas. But I'm just glad I got the opportunity to work with those guys down there. And believe it or not, some of those guys are still there. Some of my friends are still working at the casinos downtown,
know,
or
really,
MGM
really
or Caesars. So it's always nice to go down and visit them.
So what was your last stop in Vegas before you went into Native Gaming?
Well, what happened was basically I left Caesars Palace. I was recruited by a former president of Caesars, which was actually one of my biggest mentors, John Groom, one of the smartest guys I know in gaming, a true gentleman. And he asked me to join his new company. At the time, it was called Epic Gaming. It was pretty much a consulting company. He asked me to come in as senior vice president of casino operations. And, you know, I think the catch was to, you know, obviously help, you know, development of some, you know, tribal gaming opportunities out there in California and Oklahoma. At the same time, we had some projects in Europe. But, you know, basically asked me how would I like to, you know, make a change in my life and also make a change in life of the tribes. And you know, I really didn't know much about the tribes at the time. You know, obviously tribal gaming had started a while back, and it was growing every year pretty rapidly. So it was a pretty good transition for me. I really didn't want to leave Caesars at the time. I had done pretty well. I'd grown with that property, transforming probably one of the largest slot operations on the Strip. But I also didn't want to pass up working with John again. I really liked him, and I really cared about what he did, and I thought this would be a pretty good journey for me. So I was with John for 5 years, obviously 2008, 2009, kind of knocked out a lot of the private-type companies, management consultant-type companies. At that point, I had an opportunity to actually work for IGT for a couple of years. But between Epic and IGT, I ended up helping over 50 tribes plus with optimizing their operations, working on revenue enhancement strategies, making sure that they're looking at their expenses, technology, customer service, you name it, designing casinos. Worked on, as I mentioned when I was with John, a couple of properties in Northern California, and one was actually in default. A lot of issues with, paying the vendors, finances, not having the right products.
Sure.
Nobody was really working with them anymore. Sure. So I had to really go in and, learn about their staff, their accounting, practices, just the deals that I put together. And, I would say within 90 days to, 3 or 4 months, we would kind of reconfigure everything, renegotiate everything, work with the banks, work with the vendors, and we did it pretty amicably. Everything, like I said, we communicated pretty well internally and externally with everybody. And I have to say, a lot of people in the industry, on the vendor side, kudos to them too. They work with us. A lot of consultants that really spent a lot of time, being on the road, true road warriors, going to destinations that nobody else wanted to go to. And one of the things with, tribal gaming, I mean, they certainly didn't get the best locations for these casinos.
Yeah.
They didn't make it easier for the customers to get to them. And, it was very difficult for some of them to make money, understandably. So, again, it was a challenge. And, coming from where I came from, we enjoyed working hard and, paying attention to what it would take to, recreate some of these properties. And we were pretty successful in doing that.
Yeah. And so what was your first native casino that you worked at?
I believe it was the Hopland Shokowa. I think they were just letting me know, well, we're going to the Shokowa Casino. And
that's great.
Didn't know much
about it.
That's in
Northern California, right?
Northern California, yeah. And very hard to get to. I believe it's through, Highway 175. A lot of curvy roads.
Yeah.
And I remember going up with a good friend of mine. I believe, he's still working in the industry, Frank Zemel. And Frank's got a character and, really enjoyed working with them. And I remember going through this path and, he's got a sandwich in his hand and he's drinking a soda. And I'm not sure who was holding the steering wheel. But he got us there and, kind of showed us what was going on. And like I said, we were a pretty good team. The team supported each other. We knew we were going to foreign destinations. Everybody stuck together. But we made some great relationships, a lot of people we end up mentoring and teaching and organizing the businesses, really paid off. I think that's what you take away, after so many years of being in tribal gaming. I've been doing over a decade now, and I certainly don't regret being what I've done in the past as far as growing up downtown, for local or private business, family-type businesses, to corporations and, you know, tribes are family businesses.
Yeah.
So it sort of kind of brought me full circle.
So what was the major differences to you? I mean, it must have been, you know, coming from Vegas into native gaming. What were the major differences that you, you know, how did it make you feel? How was it different?
Well, number one, I mean, they treat us very well. I mean, every tribe I've worked with, I have a lot of respect for, you know, a lot of the chairmen out there and a lot of families that I've worked with, and they have taken care of me. You know, even when I started my job here, everybody welcomed me and took me out, you know, showed me around, and was very welcoming. The differences as far as operation, you know, business is business. You know, we look at, you know, how they can optimize, and you know, no matter where I've been, whether it was MGM or Caesars, you know, we always found things that could have been done better, and we looked at processes that could improve. They're just at different levels. Some casinos, some tribal casinos, obviously, are even better than, you know, commercial casinos. They've taken that knowledge and taken it to the next level, and I think that is the name of the future. No matter what stage of a casino you're in, I will say to myself, the tribes are not going anywhere. This is their land. This is where they're going to be at for centuries. So the better box they build now, the better it is, especially if they're very competitive. Allows them to, make sure to generate the right income, revenue stream to, you know, take care of the families and take care of, you know, future generations. So, yeah, not too many differences. They seem very similar in some ways, but obviously, politics are a little different, and some of the processes are a little bit different. But, again, business is business.
Yeah. Now you've worked at a number of native casinos, and you're at Mohican Sun, which is a beautiful casino. I've been up there. It's amazing. Wisconsin's an amazing place. How do you enjoy being in Wisconsin? What you're living there now, right?
Yes, I'm actually living up here in Green Bay. The North Star Mohican Casino is just a beautiful casino, northwoods of Wisconsin. So my drive's a little bit different. You know, I'm used to, you know, obviously driving through the Strip or, you know, getting a lot of traffic. And here I pretty much see the same people every morning driving on Highway 29. And, we have a beautiful golf course. We're a full resort. We're looking to add more amenities. Pretty large slot floor, I would say. It's probably one of the better slot floors I've seen within the state or even in Las Vegas. It's almost like a showroom. I can't really take too much credit, but I'm definitely in a facility that has a lot of potential. We have a great team here. Obviously our mission is to become one of the premier casinos in Wisconsin. We have some of the friendliest staff here. Everybody's job is to basically create opportunity for our tribal nation, you know, our team members and our surrounding communities. So everybody's been pretty supportive. I like it. Green Bay's kind of cool. Everybody's asking me if I'm a Green Bay Packers fan.
Yeah, that's crazy. Are they loyal fans? What?
Yeah. Well, they have some of the best fans.
They're amazing.
Vegas, I've never had a
fans.
Team.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
God. I can't
There's a lot of beer consumption during the winter time and all throughout the year. And there's a lot of microbreweries, but there's still a lot of development. The Packers in Lambeau Field, I mean, there's a huge expansion going on there. And, the market's a little flat here, but I think it's great that, you know, there's developments, happening, for the Packers and for the culture within the town. So anyway, I enjoy it. Vegas, obviously not getting the Raiders. Not sure if I would have ever been a Raiders fan. I did a lot of work with the Raiders when I was in Northern California. We would take a lot of customers to the games, and, you know, we're pretty involved. In Seattle, I took a lot of players to our, you know, Seahawks games. Here's the Packers, and, you know, when we call our customers to come to a Packers game, they almost feel like they hit the lotto. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, they're cool. All right, let's open it up to some questions here. I see some people waiting. Hang on one sec. Let's pop it in here. All right. Hello. This is GT Radio. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Sometimes. Hello, hello. It's GT Radio. How are you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can. Who's this?
This is Matt Laren.
Matt, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey, Matt.
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm down in Oklahoma.
Excellent.
Good stuff.
How's the weather?
Not too bad. It's been pretty nice, actually, lately.
Excellent. Yeah, good. We can get a lot of rain over here, so.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get some of that hurricane that came through, but we didn't get any of that weather.
Yeah, that was terrible, wasn't it? But something is crazy. Hey, do you have a question for Mike?
Yes, I do. Perfect. Mike, I know the area a little bit. I always, would look at the population base around there, and I know North Star is surrounded with casinos all around you, and a lot of the population base is closer to those casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And from my thinking, I always thought that people a lot of times would have to drive past one of those casinos to come to your property. And I just wondered if there was any, what you guys do to capture a lot of those customers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we definitely have to bottle the essence of North Star here because, you hit on the nail here. And I don't know how many customers I go by on a daily basis that, actually stop me and they tell me that they had to pass several casinos, and not only casinos passing by, but casinos that are like maybe 10 minutes away from them versus, driving 45 minutes to an hour to get to us. Biggest thing I can tell you is to talk about our team, to talk about our staff. I mentioned the friendly service earlier. They enjoy the cleanliness. I would say this is probably one of the cleanest casinos and places on earth. I can't believe, and even on the weekend.
I've been up there a couple of times, and you're absolutely right. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's
just unbelievable to me. And I've been to 4 or 5-star casinos or places.
Vegas-star cleanliness, like at some of the higher-end properties, actually.
Yeah, our team members are on top of it. And, they pay attention. And one of the biggest things, we talked about is, when somebody walks into the casino, pay attention to them. When you as an employee walk in, start looking at your surrounding, look for things, help out. There's no borders. We've had people from restaurants that are helping each other from, different restaurants or, if something happened on a gaming floor, needs attention. As soon as you walk in, there's somebody at the door greeting you. Some of the things, since I've been here, I've changed. I just wanted to make sure it's full circle and we don't lose this feeling. So I'm glad you asked that question. That's, I'm amazed by it, and I hope
question,
it continues.
Yeah, I mean, what he said about the feeling, right? So, it's like the feeling when you walk into a casino and you hear those sounds that make you feel like, wow, I got to get into the action. That's a big thing. It's a big thing to get players in there. If you can feel the vibe, it's an amazing thing. Matt, did you have another question? Shoot, if you want.
Yeah, the only one I want to know is what's the recipe to your chicken wild rice soup?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. If we give you that recipe, then, you may have to disappear. But I think that is a full meal. Even a cup of that soup will, it's probably 4,000 calories. So.
Oh, my God.
I would say a lot
really
of cream.
Good,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a must have, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Matt. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
All right,
Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Say hi to Jan for me.
I will.
Okay, take care, bud. Great guy, Matt Laren. All right, let's see what we got here. All right, I'll get someone else here. Let's see. Oh, hello, this is GT Radio. I have Michael Bonnectar. Hello, GT Radio. I guess this is one of those that's not coming through. Yeah, go to the next one. It's actually a pretty cool studio thing they got here, but sometimes it gets it's a little tricky. Let's see who this is. Hello, it's GT Radio.
Hey, this is Michael. How are you guys doing?
Good. How
Excellent.
About yourself?
How are you?
Good, good. Hey, yeah, well, for first, and this is for both of you guys, you know, Tino and Michael, known you guys a long time, and, you know, you've been a great resource of information for me and for a lot of people in the industry. So, you know, just a big thank you to both of you guys and for taking the time to do
Thanks.
This for everyone.
Appreciate that.
Question for you, Mike. What do you think the biggest challenge is for native gaming over the next 5 years?
Well, there's definitely going to be different types of challenges. You know, every state will have its own challenge, whether it's competition, internal growth challenges, you know, the market itself becoming stagnant. You know, commercial gaming at the same time is growing. International gaming is growing. Every state or every tribe has its own compact. I think there's a lot of things you're going to have to be aware of, whether it's taxation or competition. You know, one of the biggest challenges I'm having, and I've been through numerous meetings all throughout the nation, is recruitment and retention. Retention, you can probably work on that a little more, but as far as recruitment, you know, finding talent, there seems to be a much smaller pool of people, you know, that, you know, obviously, you know, can be remedied with, you know, some of the things that we can do. But when you're a little further out and, you know, somebody doesn't want to drive as much, you know, 45 minutes or an hour to, you know, come to work, they might find a job, you know, closer to home, even getting paid a little bit more. So, you know, for us to expand, we need people. You know, people are your, you know, biggest assets. And, you know, without that, you know, we can come up with, you know, great plans of expanding and adding on, but not being able to, you know, take care of it, that becomes a, you know, huge challenge. You know, the automation technology and some of the things that are out there right now, they're not exactly bulletproof, you know, so you can't, you know, just, you know, utilize artificial intelligence or complete automation to take care of something or customer service situation. But, you know, in time, I think that's going to help. But, you know, we certainly here find a big challenge. So anybody wants to work at North Shore, you just let me know. You know, we have openings.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glauser. Appreciate it.
My Thanks,
pleasure.
Mike.
Okay. Talk to you later, Mike.
Yep. Bye. Take that one. All right. Let's see what else we got here. Try this one again. Hello, this is GT Radio. Hello.
Hello. Hello, GT Radio.
How are you?
Hello. I'm doing great. This is Matt Neely calling in from Des Moines, Iowa. How you doing, Mike and Tino?
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Good. Hello, Mr. Neely. Good to hear you, buddy.
What's that?
I said good to hear you.
Yeah, good to hear from you guys. So I just had a quick question for Michael. Starting out as I am in the casino digital space, I find myself running into the typical barriers to adoption that anyone would see in a technological business, the kind of the reticence to try something new and that kind of thing. In your experience, what has been the single biggest problem in getting people to adopt the new technology, and how did you overcome it?
Well, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. That's a great question. You know, I think it really comes down to, you know, training, communication. I think, you know, initially, the whole team being on the same page. I think, you know, you find new products out there that maybe one or two people are involved in making that decision from the top. And by the time you actually implement it, there's no one, you know, on the ground floor that has to actually utilize this tool or application or software as a clue. So I've seen some things fail, you know, obviously, you know, from the past even, you know, some more basic stuff to, you know, if we're going to be installing an app or updating a website or adding any type of new tools currently, you know, what we do is, you know, really get the whole team involved and make sure that they all understand a piece, that they all know how to use it. There's no reason to launch something that is not going to be as effective You know, for me, that's worked. Even, you know, I'm not saying you're not going to have challenges afterwards. I think, you know, with new technology, you should expect some type of challenge. I think the manufacturers themselves sometimes don't know some of the challenges, and you know, they start immediately working on hot fixes and you know, working with you to get the next level. So I think, you know, having great communication, we've had a lot of challenges here, and you know, I think with the help of all the vendors, you know, we're kind of getting through, you know, what we need. It's also important to make sure those systems are, you know, configured correctly from the get-go. That configuration should match your budget. It should match your final plan. That's not, you know, and I've met with a lot of people that haven't done that, and, you know, it's like, you know, this is going to cost something, but you don't have the budget for it, but you still want to do it. It just doesn't make any sense. So there's a lot of components to that, but, you know, best thing I can tell you is, you know, you really have to do your study, and you really have to make sure you communicate that internally. And then, obviously, your customers. You know, customers are really the end user. So, you know, if an app failed, I mean, it's really your fault. You know, so if you're going to launch it, you want to have a launch party. You want to make sure you're inviting the right people. You know, you may launch it in small segments. Maybe launch it with your employees and some customers. Get all the bugs out. Make sure everybody's on board. Make the changes, and then launch it, you know, 100%.
Yep. Great. Great.
That's fantastic feedback, Mike. Just as a follow-up, a quick follow-up.
Yeah.
Just listening to Mike talk about that, it sounds a lot like what I've learned utilizing kind of the lean development approach, where you really communicate everything you can, and you're always iterating, and you're always making fixes, and you're always talking to your users. And it was really good to hear kind of that feedback coming from his role. So that was great. I was just curious if you had any thoughts on how you apply the lean development approach to a casino technology problem.
I think that's, you know, in some ways we are doing that, you know, at our property with some of the challenges that we have. You know, we, you know, from the past, sometimes, you know, some projects or some of the issues that pop up, people tend to forget about them. We're here to say, you know, let's not forget about anything, because some of those problems can cause other issues in the future. So, and also we found out that new things are appearing as some of the softwares are getting upgraded, and we're trying to figure out. And that was one of our suggestions, actually, to the manufacturers. Were that, you know, you have instances of all these issues throughout the United States, throughout the world, probably at this point. You should know the symptoms. You should know when somebody calls within 30 seconds how to fix that, because you've had it. You've had it in thousands of different places, thousands of times. But again, you know, I don't think their artificial intelligence is built to that level. Internally, you know, I think, you know, there's been a lot of challenges, a lot of corporations joining, a lot of acquisitions. So, you know, at some point when those teams come together and they're working on those things, and we're doing the same thing internally, we're looking at, you know, if we have technological issues, which departments, what was it, what do we do, what hours, what peak times do we need to have more coverage, what do we do, you know, what kind of redundancy are we building, and so on and so forth. I was, and to give you kind of an example, I was stuck in Chicago last week for, you know, an airport, O'Hare Airport, and after 8 hours, they finally figure out that, you know, the flight was canceled. So, you know, they could have easily put me on a different flight. It was a big mix-up, and nobody really knew anything. There was no communication. None of the systems were communicating. Obviously, those guys have had a lot of challenges in the last few years, and you know, obviously, I think lean processes and, you know, challenging these systems, whether it's in our business, you know, airline business or any business, provides you better customer service. End of the day, that's what we're doing these things. So, yes, it's going to generate more revenue, also save you on your expenses, but the hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, companies are spending now to take care of these issues, if they just focused on, you know, really hiring the right people and building their infrastructure for taking care of these things through the lean processes, I think would be beneficial to them. So that's my opinion.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. That's a really comprehensive answer. I appreciate that.
Anytime, man.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for calling. All right, let's see who else we got here. Some great stuff. And it's all about the people, right? That's the bottom line. It's GT Radio. Mike Monica.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, Mike. You have a great voice, by the way. You should be starting a radio. radio for yourself.
You can be Mike.
Well, I can do commercials on the side for you. Here we go.
Hey, so I know I've gotten to know you pretty well over the last year or so. So my question, I know you've made a lot of personal sacrifices in your career, you know, getting, let's say, from the director level or wherever you were at, in Vegas, and now at the GM level. If you could talk about some of your, personal sacrifices that you've made, and also advice you would give to somebody, let's say, who's at, a manager, director level and wants career path towards the GM, COO, because that's pretty difficult to get. So I wonder if you have some advice for, people that have that.
Well, I think, bottom line is, we don't live that long on this earth, whether it's 70 years or 100 years, in some ways there's a rush, but in some ways it's not a rush. I mean, you learn what you can. Hopefully you network, you meet with people that can see your qualities, and that's where you get your chances. You have to show yourself. I tend to want to be the leader with all the examples. I've worked all my life to inspire employees, people that work with me side by side. Growing up, wasn't like we're trying to outdo each other, but whether it was a pay in a jackpot, trying to pay a little faster, get to the customer a little bit faster, talk to the customers, making sure that we're identifying the issues. How do we fix them together? How do we communicate that back to the whole team? One of my mentors told me, Mike, be humble, be patient. I wanted to move up. Hey, I'm ready for that next job. So, when do I get it? But I'm glad I slowed down a little bit. I've had several transitions. Sometimes I had to go and take a job below, and after 2-3 months, I end up getting 2 promotions. So, you just have to show yourself. You have to show what you are capable. I was lucky. 2 great corporations like MGM and Caesars invested in my education. And whether you have that opportunity or not, it's up to you. Where you're working, you can always do that for yourself. If you can't go to school, read a lot of technical manuals, stay focused on the industry if that's where you want to be within the gaming industry, which offers pretty much everything. And I have a lot of people I'm currently working with, and I've worked in the past. I've mentored them to, whether it was, IT or slots or gaming in general or food and beverage, kind of moving from one location to another. They got promotions. They got their own department style. They're great leaders. I have the feature generation that's working with me now, and I see some of them very, very hungry. Very hard workers, and I have the same advice for them. I kind of see a little bit of myself in them. And I wish I could just here you go, become an executive director or become a general manager, a CEO. Here's the job, but you just have to be ready for it, and you got to be prepared, because they got to realize that now they have the livelihood of whether it's 500 people or 10,000 people in their hands, and that's a huge responsibility. So whether you're running a small department, you got to be able to take care of that team. So, that's one of the biggest attributes, being able to work with a team, be a team builder, understanding what that team can do for you, understand everybody's talents. That's what I usually do, because I, learned that from high school, playing soccer and just kind of, working with different kids out there. Just, we would beat the jocks. I could take five kids from any class from anywhere. Maybe not even played soccer before. We would just work together, communicate together, come up with some drills, and you know, we would score goals. We, you know, apply that same thing in our business. You know, as a leader, these are the things that they have to work on. They have to make sure that they know exactly, you know, what every person's capable of, and also show that they care about them. So hopefully there'll be more leaders, and you know, I look forward to even, you know, mentoring more people in my career.
All right. Great. Thanks, Mike. I look forward to catching up.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep.
No problem, girl. Anytime.
Okay, let's see. Who else do we have here? Okay. Oh, here we go. This is GT Radio. We have Michael Bonnick. Hello, who are we speaking with?
Hello, it's Michael Kahanui. How's it going?
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Mike?
A lot of Michaels today.
Oh, yeah. There's only so many Michaels to go around, right?
Aloha, our friend. We are mutual friends here.
Yeah.
Good to hear you, my friend. How are things? Yeah.
Things are great. Things are great. Actually, I really like what you said, Mike. I think it's a good point. And certainly, I'm volunteering to put my name out there. If you can do all that mentoring, shoot, I'm ready for the mentoring.
Come on down.
Yeah.
We'll have to do online. Tough, hey, that's,
yeah,
that's,
no,
that's
I got
not
you.
A bad
online
idea.
Online classes according to Benactar, right? Life according to Benactar.
Yeah.
I wish I had more time, I tell you.
Everything, right? But, I mean, you can mentor people while you're doing business with the people that you're touching and interacting with. Yeah, I mean,
and here's one thing about mentoring, guys. I think people that want to be mentored, like I said before, they have to focus on, I mean, if you want to model yourself after someone, that's some of the things I've done in the past. You got to look for those, the strengths of the leader, you know, making sure that, I mean, if you were looking to mimic him, you know, but then ask the questions, you know, why did you make that decision? But just watching people, you know, make decisions, hearing them out, you know, working on strategy, you know, making sure that you can apply that the right way, because if you can't apply it the right way, it could be problematic. But over time, I think, you know, it could also be successful. But, you know, I've mentored a few people that, you know, kind of wasted my time or didn't show up to, you know, our sessions. You know, the only suggestion is, you know, always be respectful of people's time and their commitments. And if you are going to be mentored, you know, be committed.
Absolutely. It's very important. Mike, did you have a specific question?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I've actually had the opportunity to know Mike for a while, and you know, always have watched his career grow, and certainly have asked him multiple times on many occasions, you know, what are kind of some of the things he did, and asked him, you know, why make those choices. So I've benefited from a lot of that advice so far. But you know, one of the things that I thought you touched on in your last statement, I thought really was powerful, and it's a true statement, and. I guess, you know, if you could talk about it a little bit more, which was the personal skill sets in developing, you know, people as a general manager or as any kind of manager, where it's no longer about the technical skill sets or even about the business itself necessarily. I mean, you obviously have to know the business, but it's about developing those people to see their potential. I guess, what are some of the tricks of the trade that you like to use when you first start out with a new team to kind of make that assessment and you know, kind of begin that process?
Well, definitely, you know, I think I touched on it a while back, is their communication skills. I think a lot of the breakdowns that I see coming in is just monitoring how teams are communicating. And if those communication lines are broken, you're just not going forward. And, you know, realizing that, you know, whether they're not having meetings or, you know, fully structured meetings, no agendas, no project planning, basically, you know, you're taking – you know, one step forward, two steps back. You know, here, you know, I don't mind taking one step back, but I'd rather take three steps forward first. I think, you know, some of the challenges I've had, perhaps the person wasn't determined enough, they didn't have time, you know, you look at their time organization skills. One of the biggest things I do initially when I come in, I basically set expectations with everybody. You know, they're just there to, you know, making sure that they're organized, they work professionally together, they're timely, they're accurate. It kind of covers everything that, you know, will make the business successful. And you know, I encourage them to work as a team. And at the day, and, you know, somebody said this to me, you know, years back, one of my mentors, and, not just, you know, being a team player, but also you're looking for individual performance. You know, if an individual is a high performer but doesn't really want to work as a team, then you're going to have to figure out where this person fits. You know, a lot of places are like, he's not going to work. He's not a team player. He's out of here. You know, no. I mean, if you got somebody productive, you just have to figure it out. And you also figure out how can you blend them into a team. No one perhaps showed that person how to blend into a team. You know, we have some training lined up here, and I've recommended, you know, numerous people. MGM sent me through some of this training when I first started. Also continued on at Caesars, was through Rapport Leadership International. I think a lot of companies out there have, you know, different variations of that training out there, whether it's from their personal growth to team building and communication. But those are really the concepts I think you need to be looking at, or different behavior traits and different skills. Do they know when they first start as a manager certain, you know, computer skills? Maybe the company they came from didn't provide that. But again, if you have a determined person and you can kind of show them or put them into some classes in time, that's just another tool. You know, if that person has the right attitude, and you know, will basically, you know, is willing to learn new things. And I've always said there's nothing impossible to a willing mind. They can accomplish anything. So it just depends. It depends on that person and, you know, their interaction and all the other things I brought up.
I think those are great points. I think, you know, one more question, if you don't mind. You know, you've been doing it for a while now, and every evolution of your career, you know, kind of involves a new challenge and a new step. Where do you find the joy in your job now?
Where do I find the joy in my job?
Yeah, like what do you get the most out of your job now? I mean, yeah. Outside of the perks of the actual
you
job itself.
Question or...
Yeah.
No. What are the intrinsic value there in terms of enjoyment?
Well, for me, you know, I know, and this happens to everybody, you know. So I think when you come into work and you think you're going to be working on the agenda you had set for yourself today, but then, you know, 50 other things come on top of that, and 50 more, and every day 50 more. What I enjoy is, you know, really looking at, you know, the work that's involved and sharing some of that, you know, in a good way, allowing others to grow in the business, you know. And I've been to some properties, you know, that people don't want to show anybody anything. And, you know, if they're in one department, it's nobody else's business what they're working on. I really enjoy, I wouldn't say messing with people, but just kind of going to different departments and working with everybody, making sure I'm meeting with everybody, and the work is balanced to a certain point, not just for our employees on the floor. And if they're busy, you know, our managers are helping them out on peak times. They're on the floor. They're on the floor, you know, they're working the weekends. You know, and the joy for me is when they are doing it on their own, I don't have to ask them anymore. Then I know I did something right, or I have the right people in place, and I feel really good about it, that things are just going forward pretty smoothly. Now I'm in a vehicle, and, you know, these properties are vessels now. I mean, the biggest thing I look at is making sure people are safe. You know, we do all we can to make sure that everybody stays pleasurable and things are just going smooth. So that gives me joy. Because if things break down, you know, I don't mind stressful situations, and we've had every kind. I mean, I being at MGM, from shutting the casino down, you know, during Tyson fights when he bit Holyfield's ears, to, you know, major power outage, to fires, to, you know, just you name it. We've had every kind of situation in a hotel casino environment. Things happen, you know, but those experiences, you know, you're going to have to sit back and look at them and say, you know, how did we handle them? How could we handle them, you know, better next time? What do we learn from them? And, you know, that information, now that's within you. For me, I was always learning, and I always enjoy learning. And I always said to myself, you know, success never stops. You know, learning never stops. I don't have time to continue going to school anymore, but I've done my share, and I think that's where the joy comes, you know, seeing those accolades, seeing people, you know, getting to where they want to be, and just running a smooth operation.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, I appreciate it, sir.
Anytime for you, Mike.
It's all about the people. Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it. Good to hear you, my friend.
You too.
Take care,
see you soon, Mike. Yep.
See you guys. Bye.
Okay, let's see what else we have here. Any more people popped up in the radar? Okay, let's see. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Michael Bonnectar here. Can you hear us?
Hello, Michael?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Go ahead, ask. You got a question for Michael?
Right. Hey, yeah, Michael, so somebody's starting out. What would you recommend that they, you know, focus on if they want to eventually get to the GM role?
Well, it depends on, you know, how far, I mean, where they are right now in their career, you know. And also, really, the question is, you know, the purpose. I mean, why would they want to become a general manager? Like I mentioned earlier,
right.
You know, it's a lot of responsibility. And... you know, I get this daily, you know, and some people don't want to get into management. You know, my mom was one. My mom also worked with me at MGM. She was in retail for like 10 years, and they loved her, and they tried to give her, you know, promotions and make her manage. She's like, no, I don't want to do it. So I think the first thing is you want to do it. You have that willingness to do that job. You know, you're not going to be afraid to do it. You have to be able to take that challenge and take it to heart and then break it apart and say, okay, so now I know I want to do it, but what do I need to learn to be able to fulfill, you know, your destiny? So, and never give up. I mean, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. But if you're strong enough and you apply yourself, I think over time, you know, you set those goals, you know, write those goals down, you know, put them down one at a time. Two at a time, three at a time, and go back and make sure you're accomplishing them. Break it down in pieces, you know. And if you are a manager, you know, work on becoming a director first and work your way up, or vice president, and, you know, so on and so forth. So it's very interesting. And I've had different types of roles. You know, I've been in a role that, you know, general managers were reporting to me for a few years. I decided to come back and, you know, take a GM role, and I've had other offers for other types of roles. I think I'm pretty good at what I do, but at the same time, you know, you have to continue with your education. Like I said before, you know, if you can't make it to college, and, you know, read up, go to the shows, network, talk to people, find out how they're doing their job, find out what their, you know, challenges are, what inspires them, how they inspire people. But you have to spend time. You have to spend time on it. It won't happen over time.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a 9-to-5 job. I get up at
five.
Yeah, and I would say first 2 hours I'm working on emails, and then, you know, obviously I don't like to text and drive. My wife always tells me that's not a good thing to do. I agree.
No, it's not.
But trust me, I'm getting calls and in between, and like I said, my day starts and doesn't end till probably, you know, midnight, and it's crazy sometimes. But like I said, be careful what you ask for, but at the same time, utilize your people. You know, once you get there, you got to use your team. You got to work with that team. That team's going to make you successful.
Yep. Michael, it was great to have you on the show. It's been wonderful. I really appreciate it. And, you know, you do have a great voice, so if I go on vacation, I'll need you to step in.
There you go. Absolutely.
Great, my friend. Have a great
rest. We both need a vacation.
Thank you, everyone.
All right,
yeah,
all right, Tino.
I'll talk to you later.
You had some great okay. Questions, and I really appreciated you having me on the show.
Thank you so much. We'll talk later. Take care, Mike.
All right, brother. Take care.
Yeah. Now, that was great. Mike's a great guy. He knows a lot of stuff. Next week, I think it's September 7th, I have Ken Manuel on the program, CEO of Gila River. Another great friend, another great guy, and
just an amazing story. You know, I think he's a role model for many people in Native Nations. Truly, truly amazing story. So tune in, Ken Emanuel, September 7th, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's T. Magneta signing off. Remember, everybody's got a story. You just got to have time to listen to it. All right, take care. Bye-bye.